Headlines to wake up to this morning. Gamecock basketball. Disappointing loss at Alabama. Carolina Panthers going a different direction with their offense. And if you're like me, you might be a little bit depressed now that college football season's over. It really set in, I think, today. Yesterday, I was still riding the momentum. Great game.
Yeah.
I mean, there was even a press conference after our show, right? 9 o'clock yesterday morning. This the classic Saban, take more pictures with the trophy, tell us more about it. And they say they haven't gone to sleep, the whole thing, the celebration. And now it's really setting in. We're all done with football season this year in college football. And that just doesn't make me very happy this morning.
I understand. I feel bad for you. It is. And then on top of that, the official hiring of John Gruden, because I don't watch a ton of Monday Night Football.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'll watch Monday Night Football more for listening to John Gruden than I do for the actual whatever actual game is going to take place. So now you take that away from me, and you just took away some college football for the next 9 months. And I feel like it's a rough day. It's kind of sad.
I think in my lifetime, I just hit 40 not too long ago, I haven't seen an institution in sports get less important than Monday Night Football. Can you think of anything else? Because when I was growing up, it was...
All-Star Games as a whole?
Maybe. That's probably a pretty good second. You could say the dunk contest, I think, because that was a really big deal back in the 80s and Jordan and Dominique Wilkins and the whole thing. But Monday Night Football was an institution, and it used to be appointment viewing. It used to be the game that everyone would watch.
Right.
Every single week. The game. And... now that's Sunday Night Football to a large degree because they get the better game. And then you also have Thursday Night Football watering things down.
Right.
You can see all the games all the time. And it's just changed so significantly.
But it
is pretty representative, I guess, of where we've come here in the last 40 years.
But I guess that's my point, is that I don't go out of my way generally to watch Monday Night Football for the terrible matchup for the games. I go out of it because I want to listen. I mean, like Tirico and Gruden – when you start going down and talking about some of the best, your favorite announcing teams, you could have paired Keith Jackson with pretty much an owl, and it would have worked perfectly. Like, Keith Jackson is up there at the top. I was a fan of Gary Danielson and Vern Lundquist. I know a lot of people thought Vern Lundquist was watching a completely separate game and trying to call one, but I always liked those two. But Tirico and Gruden, to me, were as good as there was a group. Then Tirico leaves to go to I believe, NBC, I believe is where he went.
He's basically grooming to take over for Costas, it seems like.
Yep. And so that left Gruden.
And Sean McDonough.
And, you know, and again, it was kind of one of those things where I liked him, but it was Gruden was still the main attraction there. And so, yeah, now back to the Raiders. And, look, he's not going to win a Super Bowl with the Raiders. If you look at his career, he was a pretty average coach. By and large, very average coach. He had a Super Bowl win. Obviously did some good things with the Raiders. But
so in your world, average means Super Bowl winning coach.
He won one Super Bowl, and by and large, when you look at the rest of his career, this is why I kind of wondered why the infatuation that Tennessee had with him. When you look at his overall career, his overall career is not that impressive. I mean, you go back, I think a lot of people got tied up in what exactly he did there. But, I mean, you go back, he had a 12-4 and a 10-6 and a 12-4. Three straight years. Other than that, total record 95-81. A win percentage of 54%. Pretty average. Like one Super Bowl. But, I mean, by and large, he's been about a 500 coach. So, let me ask you this. Furthest you see the Raiders going with John Gruden is, and they've got some talent. That organization's kind of set up with David Carr and with Cooper and with some of the guys. That organization's got some players.
They could definitely win the Super Bowl with John Gruden as their coach.
Do you think they'll do it?
Do I think they will in the next, 5 years or so? I wouldn't put money on it, no. But I'm not going to rule it out. And to me, he's definitely an above-average guy and a guy that comes with personality, a mystique, Chucky, the whole thing, the intensity. He gives a buzz to an organization. I mean, this is a guy, you remember this? He was traded for two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and $8 million.
Right.
A coach was traded from the Raiders to the Tampa Bay Bucks back in the day. It was so weird, and now he's back there. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, the $10 million per year, 10 years, the $100 million contract is an absolute, to me, there's a difference between average and overrated. I think he's an above-average coach for sure. I think $10 million a year is a little overrated to me. But I think it'll be good for the NFL if he does well, if he's significant, if he's playing at this time next year, if the Raiders are involved. If the Raiders are good in the NFL, I think it's good. The Packers are good. Those kind of traditional teams, if they're relevant, it helps the NFL. Makes it more interesting to me.
I'm with you. But no, yep, you do that. You talk about lack of college football. I tried last night. Obviously, we'll talk about South Carolina basketball, but I tried to get into that. That was an early game. Is you make the transition. You kind of make the transition away from Monday night's football game now into full college basketball mode. And I watched a little bit of I watched South Carolina, Alabama. I watched a little bit of Kentucky, Texas A&M. Kentucky trying to blow that game at the end, giving Texas A&M multiple chances to win and or tie. I watched a little bit of Michigan and Purdue. I will try this week to readjust, spend the weekend adjusting into college basketball mode. And I will say this, and I think Jen will agree with this, because we don't live too far from each other, not that the rest of Columbia didn't get it. But it was actually kind of nice weather. Went outside yesterday, played football with the boy.
Oh, nice.
So there was no football. We got outside because all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't 5 degrees everywhere. Mm-hmm. So we got outside, threw the football around. So spent some time, did that. So it was kind of.
Yeah, I'm a little sore today. I did that as well. 9 year
You're
old
sore,
guy.
You got tackled.
Yeah, are you kidding me? I actually moved around outside.
What a
my body's like, what's going on, dude? What's the deal with this? The 9 year old got involved with a couple of 4 year olds I was playing with. That dude was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
I made some moves that I should not have made, and now I'm paying for it today. There's no doubt about it.
Okay. Well, I guess we should have brought in some Ben Gay, and you know,
give the studios a distinct smell this morning.
A heating pad over there for the old man. I tell you what, you turn 40, you come unglued.
A little creaky this
the
morning.
Rocking chair instead of the, you know, whatever chair you have now.
Oh, that would be amazing. You would just hear snoring, I think, probably, especially in the 6 o'clock hour. Get some lemonade going in here. Okay. We'd be in good shape.
But I did. I tried to turn into college basketball mode last night and watch a couple games and start, because I think at one time it scrolled across the bottom and I said to no one in particular except for the five-year-old, hey, West Virginia is number two. Did you know that?
Right.
West Virginia is number two in the nation.
It's been a really weird year in college basketball, I think, just from a parity standpoint at the top.
Yeah.
It's like they're...
There are no undefeated teams left. I don't know if everybody's aware of this. Like,
I think it's almost like the college football season. This year, there was no dominant team. We thought Alabama might be that dominant team, and clearly Auburn showed us that they were not. Clearly, the national championship game showed us they weren't dominant, and Georgia was right there. It's a good time for us to look back on the 2017 college football season at large and give some superlatives out there. We can have a little bit perspective, a little bit more perspective now that we're at least a day plus removed from the entire season. It doesn't make me start off my morning with a smile, but it'll be okay. We'll get over it. We'll work through it. We'll talk it out this morning together. And we're going to have to do that with Gamecock basketball for sure after that performance last night. The final score was not indicative of how poorly the Gamecocks played in this one. And Frank Martin just especially not happy with his team's defense. Alabama was shooting 60% for most of the ball game and ended up shooting 59% only because they basically let up a little bit at the end, and it was a 14-point margin at the end, 76-62, the final score. Gamecocks dropped to 1-3 in conference play. Alabama cruising to a victory without the SEC's leading scorer doing much at all for them and Colin Sexton. But we'll get into more of that as we roll on this morning. Want to hear from you as well, 803-404-6100. Best, worst, and most memorable of the 2017 college football season. Wesley Myers leading the way for the Gamecocks last night. 12 points in the first half, finishes with 15. Carolina loses by 14 at Alabama, 76-62. Both teams now 10-6 on the season. The Gamecocks dropped to 1-3 in the SEC. Alabama 2-2. Both teams look very different to me, Bill. It looked like Alabama was a really talented team last night that needed a win, first of all. They were coming off a terrible performance where Georgia whipped them over the weekend. So they had a little extra motivation, no doubt. But they had their best player basically in foul trouble the whole game. Didn't play very well. Chris Silva was pretty similar with the Gamecocks. But Alabama could weather that storm much easier than the Gamecocks. Just a much more talented roster, it looked like to me. And the way they dominated in the interior, the way they got a bunch of easy buckets, they shot 59% on the game. They could have easily shot 60-some percent. They shot 64% in the first half, basically. And this was not just draining threes like the, remember Avery Johnson Jr. Right. last year, just throwing stuff up and knocking it down. It wasn't that type of game. This was no fluke. And I think it might have been one of the more discouraging performances, if not the one at the top this year for Gamecock basketball, because of what they had just done against Vanderbilt over the weekend to get their first SEC win, because of what you heard out of Frank Martin saying Chris Silva had taken a step up in leadership, and they recaptured some enthusiasm after the deflating Clemson loss and then the first two SEC losses, 76-62 last night. And that was kind of kind. The 14-point margin could have been much worse. It jumped, it was 23-8 early on, yeah. Real quick, 15 points real quick, and then the Gamecocks never really challenged, even though they cut the halftime deficit down to 7.
What I noticed was a wild difference in athleticism. You talk about the interior.
Yeah, I said talent. Athleticism is probably the best.
I thought, you know, you take Chris Silva out of that lineup all of a sudden, and the athletic ability of the South Carolina's interior players are almost non-existent. And that's, to me, Dante Hall had a block on Wesley Myers last night that Myers ended up, he was down for a little while and got up and ended up
coming
back.
Yeah, he came down hard on his shoulder.
See, I thought it was his leg, the way his leg kind of landed on the ground and kind of popped out. And it
was ugly, no matter how you look at it. Right? And, it was kind of the whole side of his body could have been hurt. Start from the foot all the way up to the shoulder.
But that was an example. And then there was another block, and I can't remember if it was on Cud or Hase or even Kotsar, where they made a good move and they beat their guy. And the athleticism of, I think it was Hall or one of the, or maybe it was, might have been Daniel Giddens,
right.
just negated anything that they did. And South Carolina right now, athletically, from top to bottom, is just not, we know Hassani Cravette can jump. I mean, he can get out of,
Good to see him back in SEC play for the first time. He had a good span of a few minutes there towards the end of the first half that helped Carolina cut that thing down to 7. Other than that, he didn't get a whole lot of production.
But
he ended up with 7 points in 15 minutes of play last night.
You know, even last year, I wouldn't say South Carolina was wildly athletic last year, but what they were is they were long. They were, P.J. Dozier was 6'6", and Darius Thornwell 6'5", 6'6". When Justin Mackey came in, you had length.
But they always had the distinct advantage of bigger guards.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They had the length, and so they could get away with some of the rebounding stuff. Right now, I mean, Justin Manaya is trying. There was a play in particular last night, second half late. Somebody shot a three, and he kind of came in from one side and grabbed a rebound and had kind of an easy putback. And it's just the length of Alabama bothered him, and he missed an easy putback. And it kind of reminded me of the early years of Frank Martin's team when, look, you had Lamona Sakevicius and Mindaugas Kaichinas playing hard. They'd go out and give you their all every night. But athletically, they just couldn't match up. They'd miss shots around the rim. And Martin would get kind of upset about it, and it was just those guys athletically were inferior to the guys they were going against throughout the league, and you had to do so much technically right and fundamentally right to have success. And right now, that's what I saw last night, is a lack of – and Alabama seems to roll in with wild athletes each and every year. Can they get them to play together and be a good team? That Alabama team's underachieving right now, 10-6. That's supposed to be a good – team, there's a lot of high-quality players on that basketball team. So 10-6, and they do have losses to some really good teams. It's not like they've had bad losses. But that was, I think, the most concerning thing as I watched it last night, is South Carolina just at the guard spot is not as athletic as the opposition. And in the front court, they don't match up. I mean, it's nice to see Jason Cudd getting some minutes. And I think he's going to be a good player in time. But, man, you just watch the different level of athleticism last night. When somebody makes a mistake on defense, the recovery ability to block a shot or to get back in the way, there's a significant difference between Alabama and South Carolina.
The Gamecocks go to Georgia now this weekend. It certainly doesn't get any easier anytime soon. That their upcoming stretch of the next 5 games is really going to be difficult. And they're going to have to play significantly better, especially defensively. Offense last night, it wasn't good. They ended up shooting 36% on the game, but I thought the lack of defense was the most glaring issue there, all the easy buckets that Alabama got. Now, they did play really well on Colin Sexton. They got the benefit of a couple of calls as well, and he was in foul trouble. He didn't play well. He was the SEC's leading scorer going in, more than 20 points a game. He finishes with 5, but the way that Alabama was – I didn't even realize Sexton wasn't really scoring until like towards the end of the first half.
Because I think he finished with six?
5 points.
Okay, five. All right, yeah.
5 points in 22 minutes. Four fouls. But Alabama was never in danger of losing the game when their best player, the leading scorer in the SEC, didn't do hardly anything. I think that pretty much sums up that game. Best, worst, and most memorable of 2017 for the college football season. What stands out to you when we put that towards Gamecock football? Because I think this is one of the more interesting seasons we've had following being around South Carolina football for multiple decades now. A lot of times it's easy to figure out, hey, this was the standout moment, clearly. You got the hit back in the day with Jadeveon Clowney, right? Clearly the standout moment of that 11-2 season. A lot of times in those 11-2 seasons, it was picking out, hey, maybe it's the comeback win against Missouri where Connor Shaw, who has a new job, by the way, going to coach tight ends for Furman, it was announced yesterday, and moving into the coaching version of his professional career. Now it looks like his time trying to catch on in the NFL is over, and it was just a matter of time until he became a coach, and I think that's a good starting spot for him. First of all, it's local, and his family's already in the upstate, mm-hmm. and secondly, Furman had a tremendous season last year under first-year head coach, and now he starts right there on the offensive side of the ball and can go a lot of different places from there. I think it's much easier for him to go higher in the certainly the college football coaching world starting there than like his brother, Jabo, who started at Georgia Southern as a quarterback. He's coaching the offense, I think, for his dad in his high school back in Georgia. So that's just a different path. And certainly Connor Shaw starting at a really solid spot, I would think, is an introductory job into college football.
Well, and I think Connor Shaw has a name and a reputation. So if he's pretty good, if he kind of shows that he's got that same work ethic on the recruiting trail. I mean, look, that's as a young coach, he's going to coach tight ends. As a young coach, that's where you make your name. All right, this guy is aggressive on the recruiting trail, and he knows how to build relationships and can go in and land players. You will move your way up through the industry and show that, and that ability to go in and make connections. We'll see if he's able to do that at Furman and work his way up. It wouldn't surprise me to see him be there 3 or 4 years and then work. I mean, remember, the guy's young. I mean, what is he, 26, I think, 25, 26? Mm-hmm. So he's a young guy in the profession. You don't see a lot of those guys really get to the SEC, ACC level till about, you know, mid-30s or whatever. So it's not like he's going to do that for 2 years and then jump straight to, I think, a South Carolina. You're going to have to see him work his way through it, I believe.
As you say that, I think about the Brian McClendon track, too. It just shows you what kind of superstar he is in the right coaching world at 34, landing the offensive coordinator spot. And it was one of those deals where when that was announced, either that was going to happen here or he was going to get a really good job, maybe get that title somewhere else. In an SEC-type job. Maybe it would have been not necessarily an SEC school, but he certainly he started as a G. I think he went back as a graduate assistant for a couple of years at Georgia and then got a full-time assistant job there. It shows you where he went. I guess he had the advantage, if you see it in the coaching world, of not flirting with the NFL for nearly as long as Connor Shaw has. So Connor Shaw starting his coaching career a couple of years later than guys just straight out of college. Will be interesting to follow his career, no doubt. But when I'm thinking best, worst, and most memorable, a lot of seasons, it's pretty simple. You get a South Carolina win over Clemson, for instance, and that's typically right towards the top of the charts. This year, it was more difficult. I think the bowl win certainly helped put this into perspective and help give you a couple of more options for best or most memorable. What stands out for you talking about best, worst, and most memorable of the 2017 college football season as it pertains to the Gamecock?
I think the best is going to be to me, probably the fourth quarter of the Outback Bowl. I think you saw things click for South Carolina. You saw the defense click. You saw the offense click, and they come through finishing off a big comeback victory. And really, again, at that point, the offense really looked good. You made some big plays down the stretch, and South Carolina was able to, I think, highlighted by the long pass to Shai Smith, was able to come back and win that ball game. So the fourth quarter, I think, was the best moment, best time period there for the Gamecocks during the 2017 season. I think the worst would be the fourth quarter of the Texas A&M game. I think a lot of people may want to say the Kentucky game or the entire Kentucky game, whatever. South Carolina is on the road in College Station. They're in control of that game, something they really weren't in control of. I guess were in control of the Kentucky game for a quarter. but they're in control of the Texas A&M game for about three quarters. You're up. If you can just protect Jake Bentley and maybe get some first downs, you win the ball game. Couldn't protect him. That was the worst performance of the offensive line that night. The running backs completely let him down. You actually had a few mistakes on the receivers' parts. It was a total, and then the defense finally collapsed to Kellen Mond and Texas A&M. I think if you want one game back this year, I think you would be willing to trade that Kentucky home win for the road win at Texas A&M. That's me personally. I don't know how people feel about that, but if you could trade one for the other, you're in position in the fourth quarter. Again, I don't care what Texas A&M's record is. To be able to say, hey, we beat Texas A&M on the road is another notch in the feather and the cap of Will Muschamp. And so to me, that was the worst moment of 2017, was that fourth quarter against Texas A&M when everything South Carolina, them being up 17-7, I was kind of looking at the person I was watching the game with that evening going, wow, they're in position to win this ball game. I mean, like, really in control of this ball game, and then to let everything slip away, I think was bad. Again, the best moment is the fourth quarter of the Michigan game for the same reason. South Carolina was not in position to win that game, came back and did win it.
Most memorable, that sticks with the Michigan win as well, or what sticks
most
out?
Most specific memorable?
Memorable doesn't have to be good or bad. It's just what's going to stick in your mind. It's one of those things.
To me, the most memorable moment is going to be the kickoff return to start the season. I mean, that was...
That's a good one.
You just talk about, okay, it's football season. Woof, all right. There he goes. 100 yards? Wow, okay. It's what a start. I mean, that to me was the most memorable moment of the 2017 season for South Carolina, just because, again, it's like, all right, it's here. We've been waiting. Oh, okay, there he goes. Okay, how about that? We're off and running.
Boom. Best, worst, and most memorable of 2017. As it pertains to the Gamecocks, I go best, the three defensive touchdowns against Arkansas. All right, three defensive touchdowns in a game is ridiculous. I think we easily forget that Carolina went into that game as an underdog.
Yeah.
And absolutely dominated. And I think that really turned both seasons around. I mean, that really helped define both of those seasons. Brett Bielema no longer at Arkansas. That had a large part, that played a large part, I think, in his departure. It was obvious towards the end that it wasn't going to work out. They barely beat Coastal Carolina this year, and that was towards the end. But if they find a way to beat Carolina, maybe they regain some momentum, and maybe Bielema somehow convinces people that he's still the guy for the job, and they turn it around. And I think the Gamecock season went the other way, where you finish 9-4. Will Muschamp has the exact opposite reputation right now of a guy like Brett Bielema when it comes to SEC coaching. So that's why I go with best. I was thinking about doing the last second stops that the Gamecocks had this year on defense. NC State and Tennessee really stick out in my head, but combining the two didn't seem quite fair. So that one defensive effort against Arkansas where you saw three scores, first time in school history that's happened, that's the best of the 2017 season as it pertains to the Gamecocks, in my opinion.
You make a good point about it being a turning point. South Carolina had slipped by Louisiana Tech on the last second field goal.
That's putting it kindly.
Had blown the lead at College Station, and it was kind of sitting there a very precarious moment during the season. And you're right, they really turned that game around in the second half, and all of a sudden it's a cakewalk in the fourth quarter. It was something that South Carolina had not done in a long time. I think it was the most points we talked about them putting up in the SEC, obviously, as a team in a quite some time, I think since Vanderbilt back in 2014, I believe is what it was. But that turn of season, next week they go to Tennessee. They play one of the ugliest first halves of football offensively that they'd put out in a few years. And then somehow find a way in the second half, and you're right, hold on and win that football game. And that really kind of rejuvenated the season. Talk about a 9-win season. Again, going into recruiting, recruits don't go, well, yeah, you beat Tennessee, but Tennessee stunk. And you beat Florida, but they changed coaches. And, oh, you beat Arkansas, but they look and go, okay, 9 wins, and you beat Michigan now. Yeah, your program really is improving. So you make a good point about that Arkansas game, given where it was and the things that had happened the previous 8 quarters of football. That Louisiana Tech game and where that appeared to be going, and then the way they blew the Texas A&M game, that Arkansas game, that's a good point about most, would you say most memorable? Is that what you?
That's where I'm going with best.
Best. That was the best.
So that was the best of the 2017 season, in my opinion, for the Gamecocks. The worst was the pick six against Clemson, and then what followed with that. I thought that was the the worst. And then the most memorable, I go with you. I think you put this in there as well, the finish against Michigan. And just,
I think that was my best.
Okay.
Best was that.
I thought you were going fourth quarter.
No, best was moment was the fourth quarter of Michigan. Worst was the fourth quarter of Texas A&M. Most memorable was the kickoff return against NC State.
So clearly you can look at this a little bit differently. We all see this in our own ways. Looking forward to hearing more from you. A couple of write-in votes already via the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning. David hit us up. I'm guessing this is most memorable for him because he went with the hashtag special. He went Iowa and the Children's Hospital.
That was good. Yeah.
I agree with him. Hearing that story for the first time this year, if you saw it and you heard that story and you don't remember it, I don't understand you. I think we'll all take that away from the 2017 college football season for a long time. We get out to the Shepherd's Glass inbox to start hour number two here. Best, worst, and most memorable. Today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question. Bill and I have put ours out there at Will Gunter with 1L, where you can find Bill's. You can find me at Tim Hill 107.5. You can find Randy's right now. His best, he says, for the Gamecocks in 2017 was beating North Carolina State. The offense looks good, feeling like things have really changed. And I agree with where Randy was going with that. It was the offense that I expected to see the entire season. It moved relatively effectively. It didn't put up a bunch of yards necessarily, but scored points. Right. Very efficient, really good in the red zone. And we didn't see that consistently the rest of the way. Worst, Randy says, for the Gamecocks in 2017, losing to Kentucky again. The offense looks bad, feeling like nothing's changed. And I understand where he's coming from on that. I think we all took something very similar away from that ball game when Carolina fell flat against Kentucky. And then Randy says the most memorable of 2017 for the Gamecocks, those highly informative Kurt Roper press conferences. That, of course, did not happen.
Swayze weighs in via the Shepherd's Glass Twitter inbox. Best was winning 9 games, so he just encompassed everything.
Okay.
Just everything. Worst, losing to Kentucky at home. Most memorable, watching Deebo Samuel's return kickoffs for touchdowns. So you get 2 of those. So, you know, again, I think there's a lot of things you can like. I think the worst is going to be, okay, you've got the Clemson one. I've mentioned the Texas A&M game. Just because, again, I get the Kentucky game, the excitement, the buildup. It looked like everything was about to really explode. You had the environment at Williams-Brice Stadium that you had not had in multiple years. Then you get the opening, and, of course, the previous, right before they run out, only one of the 4 flamethrowers there works. But you get the opening, the touchdown. Everybody thinks that they're rolling. And then the whole night just kind of came to a crashing thud. And so I understand why that certainly has got to be the worst moment, but I still go Texas A&M because, man, you had that game in hand. That game is there for South Carolina's taking, and I still feel like the majority of people would trade that Kentucky win at home. If you can only win one, mm-hmm. they would rather go with the Texas A&M win on the road in that scenario that would have gotten you to 10 wins.
I understand both of those. I went with the Clemson pick six because of just how easy it was and then kind of what happened after that, or really – you know, we talk about the environment in Kentucky, that night game. I hadn't seen the environment at Williams-Brice like that for several years. And then that deflated things for a while, right?
Right.
I mean, for several weeks. But the Gamecocks were able to get it back, and they had it back for the Clemson game. The environment was there. And then that pick six happened, and that sucked the life out of the stadium from a Gamecock perspective. Reg weighing in this morning with his best, worst, and most memorable via the Shepherd's Glass inbox. Reg says the best, Alabama knocks Clemson out. The worst, Clemson wins the ACC and makes the college football playoff. And the most memorable, the Syracuse upset. Reg finishes his tweet with hashtag haterade. Hit it full of haterade on that one. So feel free to hit us up as it pertains to you with the Gamecocks. If you're a fan of a different school, you can do that pertaining to your specific school as well. Or you can just go college football in general. Definitely need to mention that David hit us up earlier, and he just pointed out the Iowa and the Children's Hospital scenes with the hashtag special, certainly being probably the most memorable from the college football season this year. That's going to be difficult to top. I've done one more from a generic college football sense as well. Best, worst, and most memorable. I go best was the Rose Bowl. What we saw, Georgia-Oklahoma, double overtime, 54-48 with the spot of the national championship on the line. That was, I feel like, the best of 2017 in the college football season. The worst, I go with another scene involving Oklahoma this year, the Heisman Trophy winner, but how the Kansas thing went down. That was the worst for me. I mean, the best player at his worst, exhibiting it doesn't even make sense, right? It's just dumb. That's why I put it at worst.
I don't know. Have you seen the video of Baker Mayfield trying to run from the police? Like,
right. A lot of things.
Like, when you see that stuff, you're like, yeah, okay. Not that I like condone it or they look at it and say like, oh yeah, okay, that's okay. It's. But I guess I see Baker Mayfield do it. I'm going like, it's Baker Mayfield being right. Baker Mayfield.
So I put that as the worst for college football in 2017 because it was the best player this year, and certainly just making the sport look bad. And most memorable, I put for the title game, the walk-off win in overtime. That's something that I don't think a lot of us will ever forget, especially after it was 2nd and 26 and how things were looking and just the precarious situation Alabama was in. It looked like Georgia might turn the tide, pardon the pun, and Kirby Smart would get the huge win, and we'd be talking about, is Nick Saban slipping? Where's Alabama going from here? But just one play, and it changes the whole narrative, man. Because it was an awful sack that they took right before then, right? And it was an awful interception that the freshman who hadn't played in a close game threw earlier in the ballgame. But we're not talking about those things anymore. We're talking about the clutch plays he did make and the previous touchdown on fourth down, where it does appear now, after watching it multiple times, that he was not throwing that ball to Calvin Ridley. He was throwing it to the receiver in the back, and that would have been deemed as a dumb call by Nick Saban to go for it with 4 minutes to go instead of kicking a field goal. And instead, now Saban's a genius. He's the best coach ever, and the whole thing, we're all piling onto that, and Alabama's going to have it rolling for a long time, freshmen making key plays in key moments. And watch out, the Alabama train is going to continue to roll.
Okay. Got to think a little bit more about this, but I'll say, I think you and I just disagree on memorable and best moment. Like, best moment to me was the fourth quarter of the national title game. The back and forth, the drama. I should say the fourth quarter and the overtime.
The finish.
That was it. Go with those. That would be the best. The worst moment, I'm going to go a little bit different. The hype, the buildup for the Florida State-Alabama game. And you go back to that. I don't know how many people remember that on opening weekend. You got 1-3, and we thought that this might actually be a playoff preview. And it was a dud of a game. I mean, it wasn't even – that was when Alabama's defense – that even national championship game talk, that was Alabama's most complete performance. They were dominant on defense that night. DeAndre Francois went down. That took away for the rest of the season from Florida State. They were never able to regroup. And if you want to, you can lump the whole hurricane and how it affected all of the South Florida schools, or I should say really not just South Florida, but all the Florida schools in there. But it, to me, that was the worst moment because you had the hype, you had the buildup, and that game was so bad. Like, it was 24-7. It was dull. It was boring. Alabama's offense didn't exactly go out and light the world on fire. That, to me, was the worst moment. And I've got to figure out, most memorable, it's hard for me to say the Iowa Children's Hospital story, because apparently that's been going on and it just got highlighted by ESPN. I mean, certainly if you want to say like the story that ESPN did on that, you could go with that. But I got to think about what would go down as my most memorable moment. It might actually involve the same guy you talked about, Baker Mayfield, but on the flip side of that, planting the flag, right, or trying State. To plant the flag at Ohio right. State.
Bouncing it off the artificial turf yeah. there.
Trying to plant the flag, because to me that was his moment. You're going with the negative on him, which I understand, because it certainly was a bad moment for him. But to me, when he did that, that was the moment that really shot him to the top of the Heisman campaign and was able to put him at the forefront. And it was a pretty good game. And
oh, no doubt. And his performance there, what he did. And that basically kept Ohio State out of the college football playoff and got Oklahoma in.
Right.
Now that you look at it in its totality, I can't see that moment in my head without also hearing the fake non-apology day or two later. And that really sums up Baker Mayfield, man. I can't see his best moments without seeing the worst ones either in my head. That's who this guy is. But that's who a lot of guys have been here in the last several years in college football. The best players, Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, have come with their baggage as well. Baker Mayfield following in those footsteps.
We just got repeatedly beat off the dribble and got out-rebounded. We had no life on the glass. You know, Chris commits four of his five fouls are just bad fouls. They're not competitive fouls. They're not blocking shots, taking charges. You know, we keep searching for leadership, and we need a little more toughness right now. We don't have enough of it.
76-62, the final score. Gamecocks losing at Alabama last night, dropping to 1-3 in SEC play, 10-6 overall at Georgia coming up over the weekend, and that pretty much sums it up. Last night, Alabama shoots 59% for the game. The Gamecocks shoot 36%. And the 14-point final margin, probably not really indicative of how much Alabama was in control of that ball game. Wesley Myers led the way with 15 points for the Gamecocks, 12 of those in the first half. Mike Kotsar, the only other Carolina player in double figures, with 10 points. Chris Silva finishes with 9 points on the game. Best, worst, and most memorable is what we're getting into for the 2017 college football season. Now that it is officially over, we're officially in the offseason. Shannon Green weighing in with a good one this morning. Shannon goes, the best, Central Florida's undefeated season. The worst, middle-tier SEC teams. The most memorable, Tennessee's coaching search. I'm with him on the most memorable one. The only one that raises my eyebrows there was middle-tier SEC teams. Okay. What do you think he's alluding to there?
I'm guessing mediocrity. I'm guessing maybe below mediocrity for SEC middle tier teams.
So like Kentucky, for instance, is a classic example. I mean, certainly the Gamecocks were in the middle tier, right? They weren't at the top.
No, yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, what the top was just three teams, right? It was right.
Auburn.
I mean, you throw LSU into the middle tier as well. I would assume.
So I guess I know where Shannon's going with it here, but I think this is what the SEC has become here in the last few years, don't you? And this was overall a bit of a bounce back season for the SEC because of what happened in the college football playoff, getting the all SEC national championship. I think there's a lot to thump the conference chest about going into this offseason compared to the last couple, where it was Alabama kind of and everybody else.
I'm glancing real quickly. I mean, you go back, the bowl performance of the SEC was not very good, was it? You got Texas blowing out Missouri 33-16, Kentucky losing to Northwestern 24-23, Texas A&M losing to Wake Forest 55-52. You go through Mississippi State, and I mean, obviously Georgia. Let's remove Georgia and Alabama from the conversation because they're in the college football playoff and looked really good. But LSU loses, Auburn loses. I mean, the two best moments are Mississippi State. I believe, even though Mississippi State was an underdog, but they were ranked, but losing their head coach, losing Nick Fitzgerald, upsetting Louisville and Lamar Jackson 31-27. That was actually a really good game. And then South Carolina's win. Other than that, you talk about middle tier. Maybe that's where he's going with it because you look at losses by A&M in their bowl game.
Yeah, but those were close losses, at least. To me, that doesn't merit the worst
I would agree with you, but still, not really what you want. But, yeah, but going back and looking at the bowl results, I would think maybe that's where he's going. That's the direction he's taking it. So
yeah, and that shows you how important, I think, from a conference perspective, certainly the Big Ten would have a lot more momentum saying undefeated in bowl season. Really good year and just didn't have quite the top-tier team to win a national championship this year. But the conference as a whole, the best conference in the country, I think the Big Ten would have even, I'm sure the most staunch Big Ten defenders would say that right now moving into this offseason. But Michigan would have given them just that much more credence to do that. And on the SEC bragging rights side of things as well, the SEC not as much to stand on if the Gamecocks had not have come back with those 19 unanswered or 23 unanswered to win it 26-19 in the Outback Bowl. And that's why I put the best or the most memorable for the Gamecocks as that fourth quarter finish against Michigan. That's what I take away from this 2017 season.
No, I'm with you on that. And to me, again, I don't know if there are any specific plays. I mean, we've talked, mine again is the Deebo Samuel kick return, but if there's any specific plays that stand out as being memorable, I was trying to kind of go down, if you did a top five plays of the year, Brian Edwards catch, maybe then the ensuing Parker White kick, like those plays would be in there. Maybe the Jake Bentley, obviously along with the kick returns, I'm not trying to leave those out, but the Jake Bentley pass kind of on the move against Texas A&M to Shy Smith, I'm guessing would be up there.
I was thinking you're going to go the NC State one-handed catch from
Deebo Samuel. Yeah, that would be certainly. But again, what do you got, a handful of plays that you list as memorable this past year? Is that fair?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
I mean, it seems like very, very few. It's kind of from that standpoint, but I think I go back, that Texas A&M game is the one, in my opinion, most fans would want back, which is why I also went with that as the worst memory from 2017.
Yeah, I think I would go Kentucky over that simply because Texas A&M has a lot more college football cachet than Kentucky, right? And losing on the road to Texas A&M, much more acceptable, I think, to a lot of Gamecock fans than losing at home to Kentucky. So I would flip the importance.
See, that's why I think that's why I go Texas A&M is because they have more cachet, because they're a bigger name. And you had that game in hand. And, again, that would have been a win that I think everybody was shrugged off the Kentucky game and said, okay, all right, that's fine. You know what? You got to get them next year. And that's going to be a huge – that might be storyline number one going into 2018 is when they go up to Lexington – Kentucky, South Carolina has to win that game. You can't have a five-game losing streak to Kentucky. You just can't. And so
I feel like I've heard this for three straight off seasons now. Can't have a three-game losing streak to Kentucky. Can't have a four-game losing streak to Kentucky. Can't have a five-game.
Get ready for a whole bunch of months if you can't have a five-game losing streak. But it'll be that's going to be a big storyline. And then looking at Georgia's schedule next year, I believe their Western Division game is at LSU. So they've got at LSU, Auburn. We'll see what Florida is in the neutral site game. And then obviously having to travel to South Carolina early on in the season. The other storyline is going to be what exactly are the chances South Carolina can win the East in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Jacob Eason reportedly headed to a Washington or likely to do that. No surprise there since Jake Fromm took his job, and it doesn't look like he's going to give that away anytime soon. And I know since you're the resident recruiting nerd, you bring up, what is it, Justin Fields, the early enrollee there who's very highly thought of, I guess, the top player in the class or the top quarterback for sure.
Yeah, he or Trevor Lawrence. I think different websites have 1 and 2, 1A, 1B.
Well, I've seen if he ends up transferring out of there and then Jalen Hurts ends up transferring out. You got Brandon McIlwain, who is really highly recruited as well. A bunch of the highly recruited players in that class.
Franks is the other guy at Florida who all of a sudden they've got Emory Jones coming in who they want to be their guy next year. And Felipe Franks now is kind of maybe looking for a place to find or to go. He hadn't decided to transfer yet. I'm sure he'll go through spring with Dan Mullen and see where he's at. But that's another big name that switched from LSU to Florida. Right around signing day.
So this is, again, why the recruiting rankings, I think, sometimes can blow all of our minds, because a really highly rated player in one class can be in a different place in college football when it comes to the guy maybe a class behind him or a class ahead of him. And that's what we're seeing, I think, with that particular class from a couple of years ago. It just hasn't worked out for a variety of reasons, right. I think, at this point. Bob Grant weighing in via the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning. Hit us up at Tim Hill 107.5, at Will Gunter with 1L. Frank's Discount Tire poll question today, asking you the best, worst, and most memorable of 2017. Now, we've had a list for Gamecock football. Bill and I have put out our list for Gamecock football, best, worst, and most frustrating, and then college football in general. This is the first one we have just based on our show in 2017 and just specifically on Bill Gunter quotes. Bob says the best Bill Gunter quote of 2017, hindsight, is 50-50. He says the worst is frustrating, which I thought always had an L in it as well. No, not frustrating. It's always been just frustrating. Can you confirm, deny?
Actually,
can you help us out?
Wouldn't it just be frustrating or flustered?
Fuss, because it's okay. Fuss. You're going to fuss about it, and it's frustrating, so it's frustrating.
Oh, okay. I thought he said an L in it, too. Okay.
Right. I was just trying to clarify there. That is correct. Bob quoted him correctly with
frustrating. Frush.
But
with an R.
He gave you the correct quote with frustrating. And
still
then he says the most memorable Bill Gunter quote from 2017. We were talking about the founder of Facebook, I believe.
Zuckerberg.
Cool.
Well,
done, harder Bob. To say Tua Tunga Viola or Zuckerberg.
Bless him.
That guy makes more money than me. Get a new name, man. Just get a new name.
Yeah, he could buy one.
Just be Smith. Mark Smith. Facebook. That's all he's got to do. This guy's quite an ego. Have that name. Everybody's got to say it all the time.
Another guy with a lot of great moments in 2017 on the early game here.
I'm on win.
Gamecock Larry joins us. Our favorite 83-year-old caller now on the Love Chevrolet phone lines at 803-404-6100. How the heck are you, Larry?
I'm feeling okay. I want to put a shout out to my oxygen team out at Dorn, especially two guys, Bruce and Robbie. They got me set up. I'm doing just fine. But the best is beating Tennessee and Florida in the same season. The worst is losing to Kentucky. The most memorable, I can't, anyway, it's watching Debo on the field in the first three games. Another thing, also, there's some Georgia fan on there, on the Facebook or something. I can't type on Facebook, but I can read. Mm-hmm. There's some Georgia fan on there that wonder where I was at, that they wanted to talk to me. Mm. Well, I can't talk to you on the fan, but let me tell you, you just call the radio station. Look on Facebook. I don't know how to tell you to look on there. But my telephone number's on there. Any of you dog fans want to talk to old Gamecock, Larry, just look on there and get my telephone number. Because that's all I got to do 24 hours a day is listen to 107.5 from 6 to 9 and from 9 until they go off at night, from 12 until they go off at night. I don't listen to the Dan Patrick show because I don't like him. But I just want to let your dog fans know, go ahead and lick your wounds. We'll see you in September. Go Gamecock.
Gamecock Larry, ladies and gentlemen, started with a shout-out to his oxygen team, and basically what I heard in there was his version of meet me outside is just call me or look on Facebook if you want to talk to me. Meet me outside, game Georgia fans. Just call me. My number's on Facebook.
I've got oxygen. I'm ready to go. Right.
Ready to go.
I wonder if he's going to say he was on Tinder next or something.
Maybe that'll be the best of 2018 on the early game here.
Looking for something to do.
Now, what he was talking about there with the best, worst, and most memorable for the Gamecocks, Ray agrees with the most memorable part. He goes with Debo's long touchdown against Kentucky as his most memorable one. Ray says that he didn't get to many games, and that was the most electric atmosphere he's ever been in. I think that would get more votes had the Gamecocks gone on to beat Kentucky instead of it turning out to be the only memorable part positively of that Kentucky ball game. Most people have weighed in with a similar worst vote of 2017, losing to Kentucky again, Ray says. And he says the best is the second half of the Outback Bowl. Nick the Quick weighing in with the best, worst, and most memorable. He says the best moment, getting the ninth win of the season when the ESPN experts predicted 4-8 for the Gamecocks. He says the worst moment, the Shiano Chronicles at Tennessee this year. And the most memorable, he says, was Alabama's touchdown pass in overtime to win the national championship game.
Okay.
Solid list there. He also weighed in and with a question, and I think this leads us to maybe the worst job in sports. He said, when did the holdback guy become an official position on the coaching staff? Both Kirby Smart and Brent Venables have a permanent holdback guy to keep them off the field. Seems like a pretty sweet gig. Is Muschamp hiring? To me, that seems like an awful, awful gig. And I think it basically came into play this year, right, when there was a new rule or a new emphasis on the rule in college football where if coaches get on the field or get outside the coaching box there, it's going to be a 15-yarder. Did we see it against Will Muschamp, I think?
Once, Jeff Dillman does a good job.
Once this year, I think we might have seen Muschamp getting penalized for it. We definitely saw it with that's when we saw Dabo Swinney get penalized in the Carolina-Clemson game when the student section threw some stuff and he got on the referees. So I think this is really the first year. The 2017 will be looked back on. We got the Tennessee trash can. We got the Miami turnover chain. And you got the holdback guy.
You got I thought you were just naming off all the stuff because you had the Texas A&M baton.
No. The pimp baton.
Okay,
we can't
say pimp. That's all right. It's all right to say that on radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Wasn't sure. Yep. All right.
But,
there we go.
But that's it was just a baton from a band member who was standing right there and just handed it to him.
Hence, that's why I said baton.
But that was not a thing. They didn't do it every game. That was just time. And no, that was a UCLA game. And did you see what happened after that?
Well, I think they banned it. It went the way of the trash can.
No, the trash can stayed.
Did it? I didn't see it anymore the rest of the year.
It just wasn't quite as prominent. I think it stayed on the sidelines all season long for Butch Jones.
They got rid of the guy who was parading it around.
Right. Stop holding it up so high, man. Just hold it up chest level. That trash can
had quite the celebration post Georgia Tech. Remember that thing being paraded around the field?
Yeah.
It made the big stop at the end.
Yeah, we remember for sure.
memorable.
Isn't that the worst job in sports, though, the holdback guy? I feel I've had a similar terrible job. I got to go be a camera nerd, Super Bowl, was it 48? I don't forget how old I am. 43, I think it was. The Panthers and Patriots in Houston back in the day when Vinatieri kicks the field goal in the final seconds. But I didn't see it because I was a camera guy on the sideline as the cutaway guy. Like, I was supposed to shoot the sideline. So I'm trying to watch the game out of, like, my left eye while shooting the Carolina Panthers reacting to things. And Steve Smith comes off the sidelines one time, and there's the phone rings for him. And he says things that I can't repeat on the air. But he's like, tell that guy I don't want to talk to him. That was the only enjoyable part of that whole experience. Like, I missed the entire dang game, and I'm right there. It reminded me of watching just the recent national championship. You know, the MegaCast has all kind of deals. But one of the deals was the Homers broadcast where you got Aaron Murray from Georgia. You got Landon Collins from Alabama. They're on the sidelines commentating on the game. But someone has to be the camera guy shooting them. So the camera guy had to have his back to the field.
To the entire game.
And he's right on the sideline. Like, the game's going on right behind him.
Ew.
The entire game. These announcers are looking right past the guy that's shooting him, being the camera guy. That has to be the worst job in sports, along with the pullback guy, because you're a full-grown male adult pulling on another full-grown male adult and telling him to get back.
Get
the
it
worst.
Back.
That's the worst.
3-4 hours a day. That's all you got to do.
That's awful.
What kind of salary does that?
I don't know. It's
six figures.
It's not enough. Maybe if it was 6 figures, maybe I'd change
it. Generally, it's the strength coach, though.
Right.
But well, he'd be strong enough to do it. Yeah,
right,
good point.
That makes sense.
He's normally got a mean enough face that you can back people down. By the way, is there a more active on the sideline strength coach than Jeff Dillman?
No.
You guys seen that guy?
Kidding me? I get worn out just watching him.
Like, Jeff Dillman is probably going to get a raise.
He
does. And Jeff Dillman is we don't talk about him as being a big piece of South Carolina football, but what he's done in the strength and conditioning program and transforming some of those guys. I think Craig Fitzgerald, I don't know if people saw this, Craig Fitzgerald went to Tennessee, is joining Jeremy Pruitt's staff as the strength and conditioning coach. And Craig Fitzgerald got a lot of credit for what he did with South Carolina's players when he was in Columbia and really kind of helping move that program forward. I think Jeff Dillman's done the same. But, man, him on the sidelines, you're right, that dude has more energy than, like, all of the stadium combined.
Mm-hmm.
Gareth Moore weighing in on the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning at Sim Hill 107.5 at Will Gunter with 1L. The Frank's Discount Tire poll question asking you best, worst, and most memorable. Bob Grant went with Bill Gunter quotes. Gareth says there are too many quotes to pick just one, man. He says he's holding out for a Wisconsin versus Syracuse matchup in basketball this season.
Kind of cool that he's chronicling all those,
I know.
Kind of impressive.
I say Syracuse the same way, by the way. Don't most people say Syracuse? How do you say it?
Syracuse.
You say Sear.
Yeah.
It's more of a seer.
Mm-hmm.
More of a seer there.
Mm-hmm.
Gamecock Larry's tablet says the best moment or the best of 2017 is simply Gamecock Larry. The worst is Tennessee Mike. And the most memorable is the bet involving the tablet, Gamecock Larry's tablet.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? I believe that was between Clemson Allen and Gamecock Larry.
That was.
True.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was ever paid off.
I don't think it was.
Fortunately, that's how the bets go on the radio sometimes. Wanted to leave you with a really interesting developing story, I think, around the Carolina Panthers. We mentioned Mike Shula outed as offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey out as quarterback's coach. It looks like this might be a family-run offense for the Gamecocks moving forward. Ron Rivera got his shot to be a head coach because of what he did as a defensive coordinator in San Diego. He did that under Norv Turner there. Norv Turner, a longtime considered offensive genius in football. It looks like Ron Rivera is going to hire him now as the offensive coordinator for Carolina. He's 65 years old, so there's that. But it looks like now his son is going to be the quarterback's coach. His son is Scott, who is a former Carolina assistant. And there are already two Turners on the Carolina staff right now, Norv's brother, Ron, and then Norv's nephew, I guess his son as well. So we're talking about four guys basically running the Carolina Panthers offense, all from the same family. That seems, I don't know if that's ever happened before.
No, I guarantee it's never happened.
Like, there have been a bunch of Bowdens on a staff at once. There have been a bunch of Stoopses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we saw a bunch of Spurriers here, right? We saw three Spurriers on the Gamecock staff. So these have happened before. I don't know if it's ever happened on the big boy NFL level quite like this. You know, Shula's have run.
What are their titles? The NFL, I mean, you said quarterbacks coach. What is Ron and the nephew? What are they?
We got an offensive analyst, Ron, and then an assistant quarterbacks coach, I think, is what his nephew
was. So two on-the-field jobs and two analysts. Okay.
Right. So something interesting to keep your eye on. I didn't realize that Rob Chudzinski, former offensive coordinator, really helped Cam Newton early on in his career and elevated himself to be a head coach, forgettable head coach with the Cleveland Browns. He was just part of the Indianapolis Colts staff that got booted.
Right.
So he's looking for a job, and it doesn't look like that Ron Rivera is going to rehire him. He said that the Panthers need something fresh.
I agree.
Now, man, it's crazy to see how these coaching careers ebb and flow. You got John Gruden returning back now as the king of the NFL with $10 million per with the Raiders.
Who can Monday Night Football hire to put in his place? Because he elevated, to me, he kept Monday Night Football afloat.
Yeah, I don't think there's a name out there. I mean, Bruce Arians I've seen floated. He's a character, but he's not a John Gruden-esque
doesn't have the charisma
character yet. Yeah. Well, he might. We just don't know him as much. It's going to be interesting to see. Appreciate all the interesting responses today about best, worst, and most memorable. Now that the 2017 college football season is officially over, we'll all have to help each other out to get through it now. Thanks for listening. The Early Game, 107.5 The Game. Dan Patrick is next. Gamecock Larry, please listen. He's a good guy, man.